Derek is the new superintendent in a large unified school district. He wanted to hold the district accountable to the same standards they hold students to level up and surpass expectations. So he earned a doctoral degree in education online at Grand Canyon University. Now he's taking charge and making measured improvements. What do you think preparing students for success looks like? GCU offers over 175 high-quality online programs like this one. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. The word green, much in the news, but what does it mean when it comes to our natural resources? That would be the creatures of the forest, the plain, and the west. It would also be the resources those creatures depend upon for their survival. I welcome Sean Regan. Sean, with his colleague Tate Watkins at the Property Environment Research Center, have produced a summer issue, and in here we find, thanks to these gentlemen, a summary of the successes, the special language that has developed over these many decades to show that the environment can be not only monetized, which is a good thing, but also protected when it is monetized. Sean is the vice president of research at PERC, as well as the executive editor of PERC Reports. Sean, a very good evening to you. Green is a good thing, but it means that we're taking care of our environment. And you have a list here of the successes and the innovations of the environment over these last decades. And the one I want to begin with is the one I know least about because I'm not a deep sea fisherman. This is all theoretical to me. I watched Sea Hunt when I was a child. That's the closest I got to major fisheries. But there is now, thanks to innovative thinking, for governments and for private enterprise, such a thing as catch shares. What is a catch share, and how is it an example of the managing the environment to not only to make money, but to prevent the degradation of the environment? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John, and thank you again for having me on. You're right. Yeah, PERC, where I work, we like to think of ourselves as a sort of a different shade of green. We talk about free market environmentalism, which is a bit different than the sort of political regulatory environment that you often hear about. And the work that we've done over the last 40 years shows that markets and property rights are key to improving environmental quality. They're not the source of all environmental degradation. In fact, they're the solution at times. And the idea that property rights can be harnessed to improve environmental quality is what we explore in a variety of different contexts. And so you mentioned marine fisheries and catch shares. And oddly enough, we're in Bozeman, Montana, but one of the issues we've dealt probably the most with has been marine fisheries, far from Bozeman, Montana. But this is a great example of free market environmentalism in action. Several decades ago, we put forth solutions that were about how can you solve the tragedy of the commons in the oceans to address this race to fish that was happening, and it was depleting our marine fisheries. And the solution that we put forth was called individual transferable quotas, which are sometimes called catch shares, as you note. And the idea is to give fishermen the right to catch a share of a total catch limit, which is a sustainable level each season that's set by fishery managers. And fishermen, once they have those secure rights to catch a certain share of that total catch, they can buy, sell, or lease quota to each other, and they no longer have to race to fish. And so there's more accountability for harvests, and there's an incentive for stewardship. And the results have been dramatic. These catch share reforms have taken off not just in the United States, but across the world. They've helped stem the global trend towards fisheries collapse. And they've also led to higher incomes for fishers and for more fresh seafood year-round. So they're one of the best examples of free market environmentalism in action that we have.
The deep sea fishing is a success. The question here is, can it translate to fishing in Montana or fishing in fresh water? You point in your article something to an organization, Trout Unlimited, in Montana. In California, there is the Scott River Water Trust. Now, this is about ducks and fish and fishermen and private land and public land. What have you discovered about water markets? What is innovative that allows everybody to gain and protect the environment?
there's a saying in the West that you often hear when it comes to water. It's that whiskey is for drinking and water is for fighting.
Yeah, but it's the same in the East. It's the same in the East, Sean. Exactly. Our rivers are precious, and we've got a bounty here in New York, and we're bragging about it. Please continue.
Well, the arid West, so we have lots of conflicts, political, regulatory conflicts over the use of water. And water markets are one solution to resolve these disputes that PERC has been engaged with for a number of decades. And the idea here is that where water rights can be clearly defined as a form of property right, and they can be transferred to a variety of different uses, including conservation, we see these sorts of markets flourish to address a whole range of issues when it comes to water use. So water markets connect the buyers and sellers of water markets, and what PERC talks about is how they can be used to enhance stream flows for recreation, like the fishermen you talked about, inland, and to improve habitat for fish and wildlife. And so thanks to several different state-level reforms that PERC has pushed over the decades, states now allow for these sorts of water right transactions to occur. So you mentioned the Scotts River Water Trust. This is an example in California of a nonprofit that pays farmers not to divert water during certain low-flow periods during drought to protect salmon and steelhead. And in Montana, we have examples of working with Trout Unlimited that they negotiate leases with farmers and ranchers to protect fish populations. And the idea is to do this in a way that maintains these viable agricultural operations, but at the same time protects the fish and wildlife that so many of us enjoy in when we go out and fish these streams and rivers.
The roaming that the creatures do in the West, it's sung about, but at the same time turns out to be an insight as to how creatures spend their time. I'm talking about elk herds, which I've only ever seen once, but they're large animals. Good heaven. And deer, I see them all the time. We have deer here in the East, a lot of deer. But what I learned from you is that these roaming herds spend half their time on private lands. Why is that a risk to them, and what can be done about it?
In the West, we have a lot of public land, of course, but what PERC has shown is that private lands are increasingly important when it comes to conservation, even when it comes to conservation on these public lands. And you mentioned elk, and they're a perfect example of that. Here in our backyard, which is the Yellowstone region, we have these migratory elk herds that migrate hundreds of miles outside of Yellowstone, where they spend the summer, and they really depend on habitat on private lands for the winter. So the elk that you see when you visit Yellowstone often depend on their survival depends on the actions of landowners that can be hundreds of miles away. And I think that's something that visitors don't often appreciate, but we've been trying to underscore here, is that if you care about these public lands and you care about these wildlife species, you've really got to think about the private land component of that. And it's important because private landowners are the ones who bear the costs of providing habitat for these species during those critical winter months. And so a lot of our work at PERC these days is trying to figure out ways to work with landowners, not against them, to help provide the right incentives and compensation for the valuable benefits that they provide for wildlife watchers, for hunters, and just for visitors in Yellowstone.
The crops are damaged. The property can be damaged by these wandering herds. So how is it that you work with the ranchers? Because I remember the story once upon a time about how when ranchers come across certain animals on their property, they get out a rifle and they solve it without anybody knowing about it. How do you mitigate that?
Right. At PERC, we see the challenge of wildlife conservation being how do we turn species from liabilities into assets. And, Otto Leopold, the famous conservationist, understood this well. He said that conservation will ultimately boil down to rewarding the private landowner who conserves the public interest. And even when it comes to species like elk, which don't, of course, eat cattle like some other wildlife in our region does, they do trample crops, they damage fences, and they spread a disease called brucellosis, which is very costly for landowners. And so we're working with landowners to find solutions that address some of those issues. We're looking at different lease agreements, occupancy agreements for elk that could be created, innovative contracts with sportsmen's groups and conservation groups that benefit from having these herds around. How do they contract with the landowners who are so important to providing that habitat? And when it comes to risks like brucellosis, We're looking at innovative financial tools to provide insurance, say, for landowners who may incur a significant cost if disease is transmitted to their cattle herds from a wild elk herd. So there's a lot of solutions out there. PERC is in the middle of a lot of these to work with the conservation community and to find solutions that benefit both wildlife and landowners.
There's a program to pay rice farmers to keep their land flooded in particular parts of the year. Why? How does that help?
Yeah, this is a really creative conservation solution, and it's often referred to as pop-up markets. So migratory species like elk, but also like some of the migratory waterfowl species that spend time in the Central Valley in California, there's an innovative approach that the Nature Conservancy has devised to pay rice farmers to keep their fields flooded longer than usual to serve as habitat for these migrating waterfowl, which are migrating along this 4,000-mile Pacific Flyway. And so the idea is here is that you don't have to buy out the landowner entirely. You don't have to have a sort of a regulatory government mechanism to try to protect this habitat. We can just forge innovative contracts with landowners to provide the habitat that these species need at the right time. And so this is a really innovative program. We're looking at different applications of that same model to address other migratory wildlife conservation issues. And the results are dramatic. And since that program began in California, more than 100 farmers have participated, created 50,000 acres of short-term habitat. So it's a really promising solution.
Let's come east. The Vermont Audubon Society has come up with a really cool idea. I've yet to see one of these bird-labeled products, maple syrup. But what does it mean? How has it been successful? And I mentioned to these retail stores in New York, why don't you get some products, maple syrup, that has a label on it that says this is good for birds? How is it good for birds, Sean?
Yeah, there's all sorts of these innovative labeling ideas out there of how do you know, consumers are willing often to pay a premium for products that they know are produced in a way that protects species and preserves some of the environmental values that they want to see on the landscape. And so the example you're referring to is the Vermont Audubon Society has developed a bird-friendly label that maple syrup producers can use on their products. And in exchange for diversifying the forest that these maple producers use to enhance bird habitat. So bird lovers are essentially paying a premium to encourage bird habitat to be on these syrup producer lands. And so there's a whole variety of these sorts of things happening, whether it's, wildlife-friendly beef is another example that we see in Montana where consumers will pay a premium to ranchers if they engage in certain wildlife-friendly management practices.
I'm speaking to Sean Regan. He and his colleague Tate Watkins have published in the summer issue from the Property Environmental Research Center an article about the different shade of green. Is there a very clever metaphor? The way green can be applied right now to market-friendly conditions. And when we come back, part of the success has been dealing with the regulation from Washington, from Congress, that is meant to protect but in fact has done damage. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.
Derek is the new superintendent in a large unified school district. He wanted to hold the district accountable to the same standards they hold students to level up and surpass expectations. So he earned a doctoral degree in education online at Grand Canyon University. Now he's taking charge and making measured improvements. What do you think preparing students for success looks like? GCU offers over 175 high-quality online programs like this one. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.